pipes if you got good beer.
Oh, you know what that means. Leaf is here. We're going to talk fishing. Sit down and pull up a, throw a line in the water. All right, Leaf.
How you doing, Depp?
I have been doing good. I hear you've been being Frogman Leaf here for a while.
I've been out there practicing my river otter technique.
Underwater.
Yeah. We've been doing some studying of the some of these side channels, or one in particular that I get to work with. And, you know, it's just amazing.
But that's kind of fun.
Every time I get in there, we've talked about this before, but I'm just always amazed at the life that we see in there. And those things, I just can't express enough what a good idea they are, and how much support I have of those. Because, mm-hmm. you know, we're working this small channel, the 1890 side channel, just to the north of Twisp here. Might look like absolutely nothing to most people as they go across that little bridge there on the way out of town.
Right.
But, you know, there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of juvenile fish in there. And at this point right now, there are hundreds of coho in there getting busy, adults spawning the next generation,
I'll be
too.
Darn.
Cool. Yeah, and it was neat because this year, you know, we've been doing it for 3 years now, the monitoring. Mm-hmm. And so now those big coho in there are the little coho that were about as long as my finger 3 years ago that we were snurting, chasing, snorkel herding into nets. And you were cracking up last time at that term, I remember. But
I don't remember you using it before.
Really. Yeah, it's snorkel herding, snurting. Yeah. And snurting. So, you know, it helps us see what the, you know, not only the presence and absence of species in there is, but how they're doing. And obviously, they're doing great. We see a lot of, you know, very fit fish in there because they don't go through the temperature swings that you might see out in the main river. Plenty of food, plenty of refuge.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, like I said, we were tagging them when they're about, you know, as long as your finger 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And so now we have that first round of returning fish from those groups that we tagged in there. So it's pretty neat to see those fish beeping back over the antennas.
What kind of data are you looking for when you're snurting?
Well, you know, it just kind of will help to show how fish do in there, you know, as opposed to out in the main stem of the Met How, for one.
But are you writing down data, or are you just making...
Yeah, well, we do a visual count multiple times per year, and also just before this snurting, and that's just counting and recording what we see. And then we get in there, and we also, you know, capture them in our nets after that, and so we can see if... you know, one, if what we counted visually is reflected in what we're catching physically there. So, and then we're also, you know, like I say, we're recording, you know, how long, how heavy those fish are, and what they are. See who's using that space. See how they do as opposed to the fish out in the main stem. Like I say, most of the time they don't have to deal with the flow variations and the temperature changes. So that can really lead to a fish that's able to just kind of pack on weight constantly throughout the season without having to find different refuge points, and also keeps them, you know, relatively safe in there from predators. Although, you know, you have a natural amount of those everywhere. So there are blue herons and I'm sure the occasional otter and raccoon drawn to some of those dying adults, or after they die, they'll get chewed up. And then there's also bull trout that we count in there. They'll cruise in there. And, you know, it seems like one or two lucky bull trout find that turnoff each year and probably have an all-you-can-eat buffet in there.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Still more than enough fish, though.
So what is the now this is once they're in here, this is their last run in up into the headwaters, up into the freshwaters.
Yeah.
Are they, how many years in between are they? Are they
Well, it just depends on species.
I'm just talking about the coho.
The
now.
Coho. Most salmon come back at either 3 or 4 years old. Yeah, and so that's what you're going to be seeing there. You will see jacks, which is a two-year-old, and micro jack, which is barely older than a year, that gets precocious.
Caught up in the thing.
Yeah, more often it'll be a male that will mature early, and we've talked about those in the past, those sneakers or micro jacks, they could also be called, that will kind of hide in amongst, get in there and contribute their genetics to it, even though they haven't gone to the ocean.
Might they go back then to the ocean? Or
no.
They will end their life up
there?
Yeah,
any of the Pacific salmon, once they go through the act of spawning, that's a one-way trip.
Okay.
Yeah, they can't repeat. They're not they're not going to be able to come back like the way steelhead would.
Yes.
You know, they're not going to come back as kelt.
Okay. Well, I'm just sort of checking it out, because one of the things, you know, that we're kind of, I believe, watching, and I know other people are too, but with sort of the changing conditions in the fisheries, they can take a hit to the system. In other words, you know, maybe there'll be a bad year.
Right.
Maybe there'll be two.
Yeah.
And there's some anomalies in there. Like some of these guys will come back on odd years.
Right.
Or,
yeah.
And that kind of covers for...
Yeah.
But you get a too many bad years in a row. Or say there's a big ocean warm-up that lasts too many years. And that's very dangerous.
Yeah, then they can't compensate for that. A lot of it is... how much food did they get when they went out? We'll determine if they can get mature enough to come back after that first year of feeding, or if they need to spend a second year feeding out there. But that can also, in Pacific salmon, that's one of their backups. With steelhead, you kind of have multiple backups in their idioparity or their multiple life cycle displays, and that they could be a resident trout. And both, as long as these are native red band trout from here, both the parents could be resident trout, and they can still be got an anadromous group of fish too, because it's back there in their genes, it's back there in their genetics. And there again, you have other scenarios that might happen. That resident red band might mate with a anadromous red band steelhead, and there again, you're going to get a certain amount of them. They're going to want to just stay here and be resident trout. A larger amount more of the time that want to out-migrate and become a steelhead. There again, too, the steelhead upon steelhead anadromous fish can mate, and they can also still bring about a couple, you know, a few of these resident trout. So just because the parents went to the ocean doesn't mean the progeny will. A certain amount of them will probably stay. Most of them will probably go. But that's a huge built-in, because then they also have the ability to come back as a 3 or 4 year old fish, too. So you build in that multiple years of fish out there, along with you know, a backup in here inland. Always, luckily, with steelhead, you don't really have that resident salmon population, unless you're talking like Atlantic salmon, or one Pacific exception would be the not as well known cherry salmon over in Japan. They can have, there's both resident form and anadromous form of cherry salmon. They're kind of closer related to pinks. Really neat looking fish. Yeah.
Well, you know, I just got back from Canada, and while I was up there, some of the guys were fishermen, and I was talking to them, and there'd been a lot of pen raising going on out there.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's all just currently being sort of protested by the tribes and so on up there.
No doubt.
It's not good.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, I ran across another one online the other day where there's some oil company up there that is actually, they're laying oil pipelines. You know, it's our great theme that started with DAPL, or, you know, didn't start there, but came to the American consciousness a little bit more.
Yeah.
They're laying these pipelines across these rivers where these are basically the spawning grounds of endangered salmon and steelhead. And somehow they have managed to, at first they had the legal right, according to law, to be able to, what they're doing is putting down these fences that kind of look like up at the ski resorts, those big orange plastic fences that keep people from running into the crowds.
Yeah.
They'll lay them on the bottom of the river and anchor them down so they can cover up all the spawning gravel, so that no fish are allowed to spawn there, so that if some ecological disaster happens, they can't be, you know, held liable for having it happen on top of the fish, because, well, they never got to spawn anyway. And even though there's been a court injunction with this, and now they're supposed to take these out, they're refusing to take them out. And so now we've got fish responding to, or coming back to spawn on rivers that are covered in plastic netting, purposefully keeping them from spawning.
It's a real difference in value systems. You know, I understand that there's, I listen to the Canadian news. They're trying to, you know, build more ski hills and have
money
economic
talks,
development in an area that is impacting the grizzly bear clan of the Native Americans. I'm thinking, could we do without another ski hill?
Oh, man, I think, you know, unless you get to these points where we have an absurd amount of kickback from, or, you know, blowback from the public or the powers that be that have interest in this, you know, money will just always trump most things, unfortunately.
Well, we got political last time.
We did.
I'm not going to let you do that this
All
time.
Right, let's not do that.
We're going to stay fishing.
Yeah.
So what else is going on in our fisheries here?
Well, you know, here, lowland lakes are cooling down.
Yeah.
Has the same effect on the fishing. been talking to some of my friends that have been out myself, been hearing, you know, people still catching, but definitely the numbers have kicked down a bit. And we do have some different area closures too, now that we've kicked over into November. So, you know, check out your book. I'm fairly certain still we've got Davis and Cougar. I know we have Patterson all year round.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of that streamlining though that we were talking about. So a lot of these rules on these lakes just changed. So, you know, check into it before you head out there. And I don't even know if necessarily the reg books are going to have the current changes. So I don't know. It might be worth calling the area biologist. Here it's Ryan, Ryan Fortier, 997-0316. I will try to look into it and have the dates better firmed up because, like I say, there was just a big change with these lakes. But, you know, they're still fishing for a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And I've been still heading over mostly to Rufus. Had a real slow day there. Got kind of goose-egged with my buddy Jeff the other day. But he hadn't been to Omak Lake yet, and we're driving past it to get to my spot at Rufus. So we figured we'd check that out. And, man, you know, it was a lot better than it usually is at this time of the year. I think I only landed one. He landed one, too. I lost another two or three, saw another couple, and that was just in like 45 minutes where, you know, a lot of the time you'd see sign of maybe one fish. So it's doing pretty good out there. What I generally do is, like that day we were driving back from the direction of Cowpie Beach, which is the eastern side. And the wind was blowing in our face. So that tells me just head up there to Beer Can and that'll put it at your back, put your back to the west. And that, you know, so either way, the wind's probably always going to be blowing, but it's going to be blowing one of two directions. So it's either Beer Can or Cowpie Beach. We'll point you in the opposite directions. I know, beautiful names.
Yeah.
For an actually beautiful lake, though.
Yeah.
And so we were just able to stand on shore and, you know, it kind of takes a long cast. But I was using my sinking line. I was throwing out some small minnow patterns. I was, mixing up different count rates as far as drop rates. And I settled on, what was it? It was 27 seconds was the lucky amount of seconds. And so, yeah, you just kind of, that's how it works. You find what the depth is they're running at, and you just kind of keep pitching it out there. You might not always see them, but if you do see a fish come to the surface, you can always try to cast ahead of it. And a lot of the time, they'll give you some play, even if you've only let it sink a little ways when you see them up on the surface. So look for that to just kind of keep improving, at least for the next month here. And, you know, then hopefully we'll be getting into, fingers crossed, maybe some whitefish on the Methow.
So that'd be fun.
We'll keep you posted on that. Okay. Right now, it's maybe just time to kind of tie some flies and think about the next place you might be fishing. Put some good planning into it. Look for, for sure, going to be doing some fly tying classes here this winter.
Oh, good.
Maybe a little bit of fishing 101, just kind of theory that we can just kind of, a lot of the time it's better to talk about these things when you're not just there on the water because it's hard to focus. You just want to cast and want to get that fish.
Yeah.
But it's better sometimes to come in with an idea of how you're going to fish.
Yeah. I still want to go on the water with you and just... You give me a reading lesson.
You bet.
You know, that's what I want.
And that's the kind of thing we'll probably go over in these. You know, we can kind of draw out diagrams of how holes play out, you know, kind of get you thinking that way. Mm-hmm. And then when we approach the water, you can kind of have an idea, but then we'll go even further with it at that point. But if anybody needs any fishing tips, there's still time to book a trip and plenty of reason to do so here. Just give me a call at 509-429-7298. And if you want to check out the blog or podcast, you can do that at methowfishingadventures@gmail.com. And you can drop me a line at the same spot. Take care of one another. Stay warm and get that fish right on. Why don't you?
Maybe you'll scalp them all down. Little fish bites if you got good bait. Here's a little tip that I would like to relate. Come on with my bowl and my line. I'm going fishing. Mama's going fishing and the baby going fishing too. All summer.